Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do With It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hi there, and welcome to the show. This is my first show. If I sound a little nervous over the phone, it's because I am. Joining me today are two longtime friends and business associates and people I worked with for quite some time, Marty Scaminacci. Marty is a seasoned shared services executive who's worked for a number of Fortune 500 companies in the shared service arena. Marty and I go way back into the late 1999-2000 range, where we began to work together with one of his companies where he was at. And my other esteemed guest and colleague is Mr. Paul Dorfler. And Paul is an executive in the printing arena and has been a client and good friend also since somewhere around, what, Paul, 2001, 2002, somewhere near, I think we started working together.
Sounds right.
So welcome, Marty and Paul. Marty and Paul will be joining me throughout the course of this of the show. The show is designed to kind of fill four segments. The first segment we're going to cover, we're going to talk about kind of culture as a philosophy and a strategy for business and how culture is defined. And Marty and Paul are going to help me in some of those discussions. In our second session after we come back from the break, we're going to talk about some case studies. One of those case studies will be an experience with Paul. Paul has followed me from two different clients that he has been with or companies, and Marty the same. So segment three, we're going to talk about some solutions to managing corporate culture and some things to keep in mind. One of our articles is 25 ways to assess corporate culture. And then in the fourth segment, when we get back from the fourth break, we're going to have Marty and Paul discuss a couple of questions. We've got three questions. If any other listeners have any questions or ideas, please feel free to call in. The number you would call in at is 1-866-472-5790, or you can email us any questions you might have at rick@theeg, that's theeg.com, and we'd be glad to respond. So Paul and Marty, I certainly appreciate you two gentlemen taking the time out in this lunchtime hour and helping me kick off the new show. So we'll kind of jump in. So, Marty, why don't you just really quick kind of go deeper into, for a second, maybe kind of our background and how we work together and how this came to be today.
All right. Sounds great. So thanks, Rick, for having me on the show. Again, Rick, when I first met you, had a very unique situation where I was coming into the Pepsi organization, more specifically Pepsi America's, in Schaumburg, Illinois, and had a very unique opportunity to bring together four very disparate functional groups into the first ever shared services group for Pepsi Americas. And, you know, obviously got introduced to you, Rick, for the purposes of trying to really define the culture that was going to take us forward, and more specifically move away from kind of functional groups into, you know, a very customer-focused shared service organization. And a lot of the things that we did, you know, were put rocket boosters on my plan to get me a lot more forward of my plan than I would have through traditional means. And that encompassed both, you know, really looking for those skills up front as we were hiring people, and then, you know, kind of evaluating progress of the group as we went along. And I can, you know, we'll talk more about that a little bit later.
Okay, so we'll kind of get a deeper dive into what Marty was faced with and the things that we did to kind of drive that when we get into the case study piece in the next segment. So, Paul, why don't you take a jump at it?
Sure. It was about 2002, and I was at a company where you had hit a brick wall in terms of getting things done, mostly due to the culture and family dynamics. It was a family, or still is a family business. And one of the things that Rick really made us realize quickly was the fact that these behaviors, certain behaviors needed to, which were defining our culture, either needed to stop happening or start happening, and what those were very, very specifically, and by individual, because those individuals who make up the organization in leadership roles really need to exhibit a number of different behaviors to change a culture. And we just we use your tools and techniques to get that done. So,
really well, and also we'll talk about in the second segment Paul's new role with the new company he went to and some of the things that he found as he stepped into his new role there and some of the cultural dynamics that were there and some of the things he and I talked about working through that. So, again, gentlemen, I really appreciate you folks, your friendship, your business relationships, and you guys taking the time as you helped me in this first show. So I thought I'd take a moment, and as we get into, kind of the dynamics of, so what's leadership got to do with it? How did that title evolve? How did the show evolve? And by the way, there's also a book in process to hopefully come out by the time the show ends. And the book is also, ironically, called What's Leadership Got to Do with It? And in original piece, I originally named the book the five dynamics or five organizational dynamics, and a friend of mine, Dr. Watterson, said that's pretty boring. So I took another look at, so what's this really got to do with it? And there's five concepts in the book, and there's only five chapters to the book. And those five concepts and those five chapters are what I refer to as the basic fundamental five business concepts or business dynamics that are going to impede your organization's ability to move forward. And chapter one of the book speaks to culture, which is why we're kicking off this first show to talk about culture and why my esteemed guests are I've asked to come on because they are living proof of some of the things that they faced in their cultural piece and their cultural issues in terms of, kind of moving that forward. And in the book, I have a comment that says, the wrong culture will impede an organization's ability to be successful and maneuver at the rate of change. And one of the questions that we'll have in the fourth segment, we'll be talking about trying to implement change based on the wrong culture. Many kinds of culture. The problem with culture lies in the fact that you can't see it and you can't touch it and you can't feel it. But in the second chapter of the book, we talk about individual dynamics. The third chapter discusses group dynamics. The fourth chapter discusses business dynamics. And the fifth chapter focuses on structural dynamics. I do believe we may be getting ready to go to break. I'm not quite sure. I just got a bleed in.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Welcome back. Welcome back with my guests, Marty Scaminacci and Paul Dorfler, as we talk about corporate culture. As I was getting into, just before the break, I was just kind of getting into, so what is this corporate culture piece and, you know, what's the functionality of it? And what is your culture of your organization? And is it working? And is it working effectively? The question becomes is, in terms of evaluating or sizing up culture, which we'll talk about kind of in our third segment, culture is not something that's tangible. It's hard to measure. It's hard to understand. It's not something that's on a spreadsheet. It's not on the balance sheet. It's not something that many businesses typically monitor. But nonetheless, there's different kinds of culture. There's organizations where there's family members and it's a family culture. There's international companies. Some of my clients include international clients where there's culture beyond family dynamics. One of my clients is a Japanese company where some of the Japanese workers from Japan were sent over to work in the U.S. operation and the cultural issues that arise there. I've got clients that have internet that are U.S.-based that have offices in Germany and China and Mexico and the cultural pieces that come into play there. So there are all kinds of cultural dynamics. There's cultures where there's companies who have many, many multiple application or acquisitions, and all those acquisitions come in, and Marty can speak to this, I'm sure, in a moment, but you have all these acquisitions, and every acquisition has a different system or a different structure or a different process in place, and you're trying to merge those things. So, Marty, you might speak to that when we talk about culture and examples. So, as we move through the show and the book, I'm excited about where we're going with this, and if you've got any questions, again, listeners call in at 866-472-5790, or you can email us at rick@theeg.com. So as we get into kind of some case studies and examples, that's why I asked Paul and Marty to come on board and speak to that. But you know, I would like to share just one of my very first real challenges from a cultural dynamic was a role I held as director of sales and marketing for a family-owned company where the owner's wife used to get great enjoyment out of saying, if you don't like it here, don't let the door hit you in the hind end on the way out. Of course, that's not the word she used exactly, but that was in and of itself a culture. And the owner's son, would usually refer to customers as idiots. So you can imagine what kind of culture that was involved in. Another organization I was involved in was I was the international business development manager for an automotive electronics firm. And they were, and that was in the late 80s, where my role was to implement U.S. content into Japanese and American Japanese companies with U.S. content as the Japanese transplants opened up in the States. And it was my role to try to sell that U.S. content, and I had to travel to Japan to open up lines of communication between the R&D, purchasing, engineering. The challenge in that culture was that the organization I worked for was heavily, predominantly, I should say, Big Three, Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler. We owned 90% of GM's throttle position sensor business. We owned 60% of Ford's, 40% of Chrysler's, and the toughest cultural challenge that I faced wasn't getting RFQs into the system. The toughest challenge I faced was getting U.S. engineers to understand how to deal with Japanese engineers, having had dealt with U.S. engineers for so long, and the difference in terms of how you deal with GM and Ford and Chrysler versus how you deal with Mazda, Toyota, Nissan, and Honda, and the rest of them. So those were certainly cultural challenges, but not to take away from my guests. Paul, let's talk about the cultural challenge as you came into your new role in your new organization and asked to turn around a sales organization. What were the challenges that you faced and some of the immediate obstacles and then kind of the ahas?
Sure. The organization I'm with now, it's been in business 88 years. It's second generation going to third generation. So there's some Obviously, there's some legacy behaviors going on. But the biggest thing that happened is the change in the marketplace dynamics and the fact that salespeople now need to be more consultative in their selling process versus order taking. For years, our company had literally just received orders from publishers because we were who we were. And as the whole industry changed and printing changed, it's now where we have to create demand. So the 9 salespeople that we have, the first and foremost challenge is the fact that I'm almost 20 years older than most of the sales reps, and so you've got the generational issue between the fact that I'm a baby boomer and they're millennials or Gen X's, or I don't know exactly how they explain it, but so you have that. But then you also have the fact that for years they really literally received orders versus went out and created demand and got new customers. So the fact that I'm coming in with a new charge to bring in sales through new and creative ways against their ability to go out and create demand in those new and ability ways immediately caused a friction that it became very, very difficult to manage because I had my stance on to where I think the company needed to go and how I was going to manage, and then they had their stance on, hey, this is how it's always been done or how I've always done it. And so having to learn new skills and behaviors was extremely challenging, and so it became an us versus them atmosphere extremely quickly. And we've had to work through those, you know, those cultural changes in the last couple months.
One of the questions that we're going to ask Marty and Paul is the impact of the Good Old Boy Network. But just as we get into that, Paul, just touch briefly on one of the conversations you and I had after you'd been in there a few months and we'd done some of the analysis work and some of the kind of the backstabbing that was going on for you that you had to kind of curtail.
Yeah, basically the old meeting after the meeting. So we had the real sales meetings, and then there was the meeting after the meeting where Paul wasn't invited, and so you know, immediately you know, the salespeople began to join forces on, okay, how do we how are we going to manage this guy, because this isn't what we're used to. And so we had them rallying their ideas and then going around me to other managers within the organization to say, hey, you know, what are we going to do about this, or how are we going to handle this, and you know, going to find answers where they wanted to find answers within the organization versus coming to me directly and saying, you know, hey, this is a problem, or I need to, you know, we need to work on this, or I need to help me understand better where this is going on. So where there's a lack of a lack of data and a high level of importance, and that's, you know, what happens is that rumor mill and gossip mill and all that other stuff starts happening really, really quickly, because people don't like ambiguity. Even salespeople who should like ambiguity don't like ambiguity. So when there's this, that level of communication is critical, and when that level of communication isn't there, they immediately resort to the gossip and rumor mill and things of that nature.
So the bottom line is when someone new comes in to take over and a new leader takes position, the culture automatically changes, and then people who've been there a long time who feel their positions are threatened,
exactly,
then are the ones who start to, you know, resist the change. And so it makes it difficult with the wrong culture to implement change management initiatives, as in Paul's case. So, Marty, I'll switch to Marty real quick. Marty, you and I go back a long way as well, when you were with PepsiCo General Bottlers, and now with your new organization where we've done some work as well. But so, you know, I think one of the biggest turnarounds I've seen was Marty's deployment of cultural change at PepsiCo General Bottlers when we took over there. So, Marty, what did you step into? Talk about a hornet's nest, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. As I said earlier, that was, provided the first, the opportunity to start the first shared services organization within that company. And really what it was is bringing together 5 very distinct functional organizations that all reported to different people prior to the move, and bringing those all together. So quickly had to develop a culture of, what we wanted that organization to be. you know, the things that we wanted to demonstrate to the company. So very different, and you know, obviously through your help, we're able to start right at the beginning to start changing the hiring practices from those kind of.
So we're gonna cut to break here in a second, Marty. So
okay, well I'll come when we get back from break. I'll talk to kind of how you help me start this whole thing going.
All right, perfect. Thanks, guys. I think we're commercial again.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theEG.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hello and welcome back. Again, here with my guests, Marty Scaminacci and Paul Dorfler. And my name is Rick Thiemann. If you're listening and have a question, which we're going to cover in the fourth segment, call us at 866-472-5790 or email us at rick@theeg.com. We'd be glad to answer any questions or have you join in our panel. Marty was just talking before the break about the challenge that he encountered as he rolled into Pepsi America. So, Marty, why don't you continue?
All right, great. Thanks, Rick. So, yeah, basically what I was going to say is, you know, you helped me right off the get-go change the whole hiring philosophy within the organization, because prior to, you know, bringing this together as a shared services organization, we were hiring for functional skills, so people that could do things like accounts payable or receivables. And with your help, really changed it around and started doing a lot of assessment testing and specifically, you know, looking for personality traits that would show, you know, people had the ability to, you know, have a high degree of customer service skills, because that's a lot more difficult to train than it is, you know, some of the functional things that we had within the group. And as a result, we had, you know, prior to implementing the new shared service organization, we had about 40% turnover of an organization of about 250 people. And we took that down to less than 10% because people were very comfortable with the culture that we were setting up in terms of a very high customer service.
And by the way, Marty, that, you know, we need to, you know, that didn't happen overnight. It took us about 18 months to do that, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But it really, what it did was, you know, we had people that had the skills and innate skills to be able to, you know, thrive in an environment or culture like that. On the flip side, you know, it helped us, you know, identify the people that would work well there, so we didn't have the high degree of turnover that we did, you know, prior to it. So yeah, it was a it was definitely, you know, kind of a whole process that we went through. But that was a big piece of, you know, what really started the success. And I think the other thing that you helped me on that I just want to make sure the listeners, you know, understand is when we went in there, we really needed to get a baseline reading of, you know, what we were dealing with from a morale perspective, you know, kind of how they viewed the management team, how they viewed the company, and all of those things. And you know, with your help, we're able to do, you know, a number of surveys of the organization to give us that baseline reading. And that was invaluable information. Not only, you know, because it, you know, really did kind of break it out by group, so I understood, you know, based on the various groups that I had within the organization, if there was any differences, you know, and that could be, you know, attributable back to the respective supervisors that were there. But you were able to give me information on a number of dynamics within the organization so that, you know, as we set the next year's objectives and goals, you know, we were able to focus specifically on things where we identified opportunities. And then by repeating the survey, we were able to make sure that we were making progress on those things. So, you know, it really did give us a very firm direction on where to go, and then obviously be able to measure it as we went along as well.
So one of the things then is that in 20 years of consulting, the thing I've noticed the most is very few organizations, well, most organizations measure either operational performance or sales performance or both. Very rarely do they measure other things that impact the business. And one of the things that impacts the business is employee morale, which is part of your culture. One of the things that impacts the business is customer satisfaction. You know, no man can control the market when the customer decides to go somewhere else. And as an example, this is in the printing industry as well, where Paul is housed, but one of my printing clients years ago wanted to know why they couldn't get past $20 million in sales. They'd been at $19 million and change for four consecutive years and had not grown. And in further analysis of their customer base, what we noticed was that there was a 200% turnover in their customer base from 1992 to 1996, in that they had 248 customers on the books in 1992, and in 1996 they had 253 customers. But the interesting piece was there were only 79 customers left of the original 248 customers from 1992. There were still clients doing business, which means they had zero focus on customer retention and quality. So a company that had 19 salespeople that continued to bring in 100 new customers and couldn't grow. And by changing some functional things, we grew that organization over the next 3 years from 20 million to 38 million. But the piece is that, and this is what Marty was alluding to, and that is that you must measure both employee satisfaction and customer satisfaction. And on most companies, if they do extend to measuring, and we're going to talk about this is chapter 5 of the book on structure, but as you look at measuring, if at all, most companies might measure customer satisfaction, but rarely do they measure employee satisfaction. And in our belief, or my belief, and the focus in the book is you've got to measure both because you've got to be able to look at both. So Marty's ability to cut turnover from 40% to 5% was huge. And so, Paul, speak real quick, if you would. Just take a second. You know, in your previous company you worked for, the turnover we lost in terms of clients because of poor quality, because we weren't measuring scrap, were we?
No, we weren't. We were doing our best to hide it from the powers to be as much as possible, and which isn't good either, because, you know, concealing the known issues in the plant that prevent you from getting to the next level is not a strategy for success.
Right. So when you look at then, and I was with a new client just the other day who's just got a great handle on wanting to drive their culture as part of a business initiative, a new client up in Chicago in the manufacturing arena. But even as I looked at their set of values and their set of metrics, they were measuring customer satisfaction, but they weren't measuring employee satisfaction. Yet they knew they had a big turnover in the plant. So, Marty, let's talk about then the survey that we used with Pepsi that helped us kind of drive that. You talked about, you know, being able to look at that survey through different departments. But what were the telling things for you as you got that survey back about your culture that you just inherited?
Well, you know, obviously coming from very, you know, kind of disparate parts of the organization into one, said that, you know, it really was a reflection on previous management styles and previous teams that were put together, you know, in terms of what was kind of coming into this new organization. So, you know, by doing the survey at a very detailed level, it gave me information on the following components. So it really looked at training and how employees, you know, thought they were being trained or if there was opportunities there. You know, the actual work processes so that people could tell me, you know, if they thought those were efficient or if there was better ways to do some of those things. Teamwork and how they were working with, you know, those around them, their peer group around them. Career development. Was any attention being spent on, you know, their development through the organization so that, you know, they remained engaged as they, you know, stayed employees. Satisfaction was a big one, and there was a lot of questions around that. You know, the actual understanding of what was going on within the functional groups, so, you know, making sure that they understood what was expected of them. And then the communication with their supervisor, was that at an effective level? Because, you know, as we all know, probably the number one reason people leave organizations is their direct relationship with their supervisor, their immediate supervisor. So I really wanted to get a gauge on how effective that was. And again, as I said, the results that we were able to get through this survey, you know, it immediately transferred themselves into objectives and goals for the next year, not only for myself and the total organization, but we were able to get very specific by group, you know, given the survey provided those results. And again, it was an anonymous survey, so, you know, employees were asked to go onto a website, complete the survey, so they didn't have to provide their name. They did have to provide their you know, the functional area, just so we could, you know, we were able to kind of tally up the results.
Yeah, so no one felt threatened because they knew that Pepsi wasn't the one accumulating the data. It was our firm that was accumulating the data and providing that research back. So it was able to be anonymous, where in a lot of company surveys where companies try to do it themselves, people are reluctant to voice their opinion for fear of retribution or fear of being found out who said what. So, you know, in the aspect then of conducting surveys, for those who might be interested, we have an article on 25 ways to assess your culture with 25 specific questions. And Marty's employee survey, we didn't nearly cover all those 25 areas that you could ask questions around, but certainly you can design the content of what's beneficial for you. And I work with Marty to kind of uncover what was important to him was a specially created survey, not a cookie cutter survey that's used a lot in the world of surveys to help do that. But the other thing is, I don't know how much longer we have before we close out this third session, but I want to circle back to Paul and Marty in a minute, but there's five things that I believe are critical that you must do if you're going to have an effective survey. And Marty's was an example of that one being effective, and I've also seen them where they haven't been effective. But I think number one is you've got to set the stage to help people know why you're doing what you're doing and what the survey is intended to accomplish, and you've got to be upfront about that. And you have to set the tone and set the stage. I think number two, it's critical that you must have them so comfortable that they'll be so candid for not fear of retribution for something they might say that needs to be said. That's kind of the holy grail. It was interesting doing a 360 for leadership is much the same way, but I asked an executive one time, I said, you know, do you have people on your list that will provide you the feedback that you need and not have to worry about you kind of ranting and raving like you typically do when you come back later on? He says, well, he says, I've told them all that they know I rant and rave, but, you know, my bark is louder than my bite. Number three, I think you must make sure that you share results with the people, which is in Marty's case, he did share those results with the people. Each manager showed him with their functional departments. But I think you must share the results with those people and get them involved. So if they believe they have a way to make a change and a contribution, you're going to get more acknowledgement and more alignment, if you will. I think number four in terms of what you must do is you must address and at the very least make recommended changes that emerge from what the information tells you. If you can't make those changes, people need to understand why. It's the lack of communication that causes them mistrust. And you must let the entire organization see that you've listened and that you have reacted and been forthcoming in your goals and objectives. And then I think number five, the fifth thing is, as much to Marty's credit, you must conduct the exact same survey no less than 12 months, no more than 18 months later. They must be the same questions to make sure you're gauging the same thing so that people see you're committed to making the changes and can see process. So it looks like we're going to cut to break here a minute. So Marty, we'll talk about that when we come back from break, and then we'll get into some of the questions about just some Q&A kinds of things. So take a break.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back again. Rick Thiemann here with my business associates and friends, Paul Dorfler and Marty Scaminacci. As we wrap up this fourth and final segment, we're going to get into a little bit of Q&A. But I had asked Paul at the break if he would talk briefly about his former company and whether or not they did, what they found out in terms of what they did and didn't do in the survey. So, Paul, you want to jump in?
Yeah, real quick. For years when I was there, we did not do customer satisfaction surveys. And then as a result of becoming ISO 9000 certified, you're required to have a voice of the customer. And so we began a formal customer satisfaction survey, and quite frankly, it was revealing. We had assumed wrong that everything was peachy with the customer, and really looked at everything with rose-colored glasses on, that we were providing excellent customer satisfaction. But when the surveys came back, it did confirm a lot of that. There were a lot of happy customers, but it also revealed a number of areas where customers were upset with either a service issue or a delivery or late or whatever. And as those surveys came back and were compiled, it made us realize that we needed to look at the way we served our customer in a more effective way.
So, thanks, Paul. So Marty, when we finally finalized kind of some of the hiring procedures and parameters, you got your surveys back. How did that help you morph into what we talked about in terms of keeping your people informed, keeping them involved, getting them buy-in, helping to improve morale? What was the leadership impact for you and your ability to grow the organization as we moved along in the process?
Yeah, you kind of mentioned it. I mean, the whole key for us was, you know, being open about, you know, the results that came forward. So, you know, we had you know, meetings with, you know, with the respective groups, with their leadership team. But we also had, you know, kind of meetings as a total department. And we went through and were very honest with them what our goals were for the coming year in terms of here are the things that we heard from you, and here are the things that we're putting into objectives for the coming year. And by the way, you know, at some point in the future, we're gonna redo this survey to make sure that the things that you say we're doing well, we continue to do well, and the things that, you know, that you're saying we have opportunities on, that we're making progress. You know, we're also very honest that we couldn't do everything, right? So we kind of framed it up, and here's what we're going after for the next 12 months, and we need your help, right? So, you know, not only to complete the surveys when those come out, but also, you know, when you get the opportunities to you know, verbally state what's working well and what's not, that you're open and honest back, that we're able to kind of, you know, get a very collaborative group together, you know, as we go forward. That was part of the culture we were trying to create, was, you know, obviously very open, you know, very customer focused and willing to say things both good and not so good. So and it really did kind of morph into that organization, and we had, you know, over the next several years, a very successful run at not only taking significant cost out of the equation for the company, but also, you know, creating an environment that people were very proud to work within. So,
and by the way, if you don't mind me saying, you know, when you left Pepsi Americas and you joined your new organization, somewhat twice the size of the organization you're in, you then again did another survey, did you not?
Yep, absolutely. Started the whole process, because I was coming in new. The organization that I was moving into, you know, had done some work around surveys and things, but I really wanted to get a baseline for the shared services organization that I was now in charge of, and it really helped kind of do the same thing. Give me the baseline, identify some very specific things that we could go after in the near term, and it gave me a chance to hit the ground running even in a bigger way than I would have, you know, with all the other, you know, skills that I kind of brought to the table. So it really does help gauge, you know, get a very quick gauge on kind of where a group's at. And it could be a one specific functional area. It could be a department. It could be, you know, a whole division, or in some cases could be the whole company. So I don't think there's any limit to what you're able to kind of get your arms around.
But I think the other thing, and here's another interesting thing I just thought about, Marty, and you and I have never really talked about this, but your current company doesn't have the same culture, if you will, that is allowing you to really do what you could do that you did at Pepsi, that the new organization, you know, you're having more challenges doing that because the culture isn't quite allowing you the same latitude in terms of moving forward. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, I think there's reasons for it, right? That, you know, both of my and really all three of the major organizations I worked for were heavily involved in kind of acquisitions. And, you know, we could talk a whole nother couple hours just on, you know, integrating acquired companies and all the things that go with it. That's what's really kept us busy here over the last several years is the multiple acquisitions that we've done, trying to integrate those as effectively as possible. So some of the, you know, more specific things that I would probably like to do within my group are kind of on the back burner for now, but, you know, still doing them when I have those opportunities.
Yep. So, all right, so as we kind of wind down this fourth segment, we had a couple questions. So I'll throw it out to both of you. So what are the consequences of a wrong culture? Paul, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, the biggest consequence is delayed results or no results. Myself coming into a new organization, there was extremely high expectations on what needs to change or what they're expecting in terms of results, and I kind of was pre-sold as a legend, I guess is the best way to put it. So you come in as this legend of someone who can bring results quickly, and now you get into this, you start realizing, hey, the culture's not going to support the legend. And then you got to start, you know, rolling up your sleeves and really start figuring out how you're going to get this thing going, because we can have all the systems in place and all the right processes, you know, documented, etc. But if you don't have the right culture, well, I tell you, you walk in every day with a Kick Me T-shirt on.
So, Marty, what are your thoughts?
You know,
consequences of the wrong culture.
Yeah, I think it's very, very similar to what Paul just said. I think. you know, as you, if you don't set a culture, you're kind of leaving it open to interpretation. And I think that just leads to a lack of alignment toward, you know, all kind of going towards a shared vision or goal. So I think once you set the culture, you know, if you get alignment and everybody's kind of marching in the same direction, you're still going to have challenges along the way, but I think they're a lot fewer than what you would have if you kind of left the culture piece up to interpretation.
Okay, so next question then is that, so as you look at trying to implement change, and of course both of you guys I've worked with and seen through coming into the next organization as you brought me in as well, but how difficult is it to create the change that you need to do without the right culture? So Marty, take this one.
You know, it's a good one. I think, you know, for me, the change was like turning up a barge, right? And it took a while to absolutely do that. But I think by setting a very clear definition of what we are going after, you know, like I say, I think everybody kind of thought it was a little bit of a pipe dream when we started, but as we, you know, as the barge started turning, you know, people started paddling even quicker because they really wanted to see what was at the end of the road. So, you know, I think we got a lot of cooperation from people that were initially a little skeptical, both within the team and kind of outside, you know, within the company. And I think, you know, as we made some progress, it really did, you know, accelerate the movement, as they say.
Okay. So Paul, I'll throw this one to you. Tell me about the good old boy network and the old adage, keep your friends close and your enemies closer, as it relates to culture, especially coming in as a new kid on the block.
Well, no question. I mean, the good old boy network exists, especially in a company as old as where I'm at now, 88 years. And there's just some great people. And I don't want to discount their abilities, because their skills and abilities are extremely high. But, you know, old attitudes die hard and become a major roadblock to change efforts. And what happens is you know, some of them you do make friends, but a lot of them you alienate very quickly. And the ones that are alienated and feel that they're somewhat protected, which they are, now become your enemies. And so you've got to be very, very aware, I guess is the best way to put it, of the conversations that are going on, the conversations that need to start happening, again, the conversations that need to stop happening, and where you're going to insert yourself from a leadership role to, you know, guide and facilitate them to a higher level of thinking to help develop all right. That culture.
All right. Hey, thanks, guys. Looks like we're wrapping up the show. I just got note that we're just about ready to end. Again, Rick Thiemann, my guests, Marty Scaminacci and Paul Dorfler. Gentlemen, thank you so very much for coming in, as also your friendship and our business relationships that we hold. For the listeners, if you have any questions or thoughts for the next show is going to talk about individual dynamics, which follows the outline of the book. Actually, the next two shows are going to talk about individual dynamics. You can email us at rick@theeg.com. We'll be back again live next Monday at noon.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do with It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.